Gladys Clark of 856 Lowell Road will speak about life in the Plains, the neighborhood that she grew up in. She is 89, and the date is July 29, 1981.
Well, I thought the story of Life on the Plain, as this area is called, might be rather interesting as time goes on. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, various sections of town were recognized by distinctive names. The Plain was an area beyond the Causeway, the Red Bridge, Cat Hill, Winds Hill, and Dakin Brook to Hildreth's Corner. You might wonder where some of these places are. Cat Hill is the section where there is a ledge which extended into the road this side of the Red Bridge. And the ledge was cut off, was blasted off, and the road was pushed back. It's right on the curve as one is coming around the corner from the after crossing the Red Bridge. And Winds Hill was at the top of the hill before going down into the valley of Dakin Brook, where it's where the Yellow House is. Perhaps you may know that Raymond Emerson spent his boyhood there. It was the home of his father, Edward Emerson, but before that it was owned by a family by the name of Winds. Well, so when we reach Hildreth's Corner, we find the area called the Plain, which extends from there to the lane, which is now called Hugh Cargill Road. In the olden days, everybody knew it by the lane. They just went as far as the lane. Now they lived the other side of the lane. Now, Hugh Cargill Road. Here was a unique settlement comprised of a former cavern, a well-equipped country store with a trade extending into Acton, a cobbler's shop, a blacksmith shop, carpenter's shop, and a cooper's shop, and the mills, both sawmill and gristmill. Life was quite adequate for the folk who comprised the neighborhood. The farms were well maintained and productive for the needs of the family. The homes were good and substantial, most of them occupied by the second and third generations, where the furnishings had the atmosphere of comfortable living. While men were engaged at their work on the farms and their trades, there were women who maintained these men. Since life of the women centered around the home, it was here their days were spent, providing three hearty meals a day that began with breakfast at 6 o'clock. For every farm had cows where the milk had to be ready for delivery before 6. With the farms producing most of the foodstuffs for the family, there was cooking enough for the day. The busy housewife must have a well-organized program for her activities. Beyond the regular meals, there was the laundry, which was a major chore. When it was all done by hand. This required extra help in most cases, and a special day, Monday. Tuesday was ironing day. Yes, everything required that laborious task with the old black irons on the kitchen stove. Wednesday and Thursday seemed to be catch-up days, so the cleaning on Friday. And Saturday, the big bake day. What a day, Saturday. The beans to be baked had been soaked overnight, were scalded and put into the pot the first thing Saturday morning, with a goodly piece of salt pork, mustard, and molasses, with water added to cover. Into the oven went the pot for a day of baking, and then came the pie making, several of them. apple, rhubarb, blueberry, squash, mints, lemon, as the season dictated. Next came pudding, a cake, and then the brown bread to steam for the afternoon. When all this baking was out of the way, the white bread, which had been mixed the night before, was ready to be worked and put into the pans to rise and bake. By early Saturday afternoon, the cooking out of the way, the lamps were to be washed and filled, and finally the kitchen floor washed. Yeah. Never can one forget the nostalgic odors of Saturday afternoon in the kitchen, the freshly washed wooden floor, and all the fragrance of the baking of the bread and beans. After the kitchen was in order, after the noon meal, the apron was put in the kitchen drawer. Dresses were changed in the afternoon until 5 was devoted to sewing, mending, reading, or with an occupation of writing, an occupation that was usually continued into the evening. Neighbors' visits sometimes were interspersed in the leisure hours. There were occasional shopping trips to Boston or to the shops in Concord for the essentials of keeping a house in order. Sunday was a marvelous day of rest enjoyed by the entire family. The heavy meal of the day had been prepared the day before, and all activities had come to prepared rest, both on the farm as well as inside. For social relaxation, it was customary for friends to visit Sunday afternoons, especially during the summer when travel was not a problem. The women, of whom there were 10 or 12 in the neighborhood, often met an afternoon once or twice a month to sew, while one member read some late book. Refreshments, not even tea, was ate and served. No doubt the hearty noon meal and the need to prepare another for the 6 o'clock supper stirred no desire for an afternoon nibble. There were two or three winter activities that were always anticipated. Dance at the town hall organized by Miss Ellen Emerson. Another was a winter pun ride to Carlisle for a dance at that town hall. And the gala event and the annual birthday party for Captain A.B.C. Dakin at his home, which is where Pliny Jewell now lives. While this party began as a little neighborhood party, it became so popular that people from some distance sought to be among the greeters. Eventually, a costume party was organized, and this continued until Captain Dakin's death. Since women were by far in the majority on the plain, they were the beneficiaries of all the parties. A summer event which everyone enthusiastically enjoyed was the 4th of July neighborhood picnic in a grove on the bank of the Assabet River in my uncle's pasture. The men could always find time for this midday event, and there was always plenty of room for the children. So with all the families together and plenty of ice cream, life on the plain was one of the fruits of life. For the poor daughters, life outside the home often ended in a teaching career for one, and the pursuit of art or music for the other. So their lives became quite satisfactory and tranquil, even in old age. We had the Hosmer girls, the Dakin girls, the Clark girls, and poor little Miss Tarbell, all dedicated to the caring of their families. Concord was noted for its monuments and old maids, and I'm one of the last generation.
I should say a very well-read, traveled person. Thank you.
Well, the trees around Concord really have a very interesting background. But think of the elms. Everybody speaks of the elms downtown and on our streets, and they really are a mark of beauty and were set out to make this town beautiful. And everybody felt if they were starting a new home that they should have a tree, one on either side of the front door. Then there came a period to beautify the homes when the people were planting evergreens, all that what do you call that tree that grows straight and tall?
Hemlock?
Cedars. Oh yes, cedars are very popular, especially in cemeteries. Oh, how they always had the cedars around the cemeteries. But then the trees were used for other purposes. The apple trees, we had quantities of apple trees. Everybody felt they must have an apple orchard. Not only felt they had to have, but they wanted, because we didn't go to the stores to buy fruit in those days the way we do today. And the people were healthy because they had the apples to eat, and they had them all year round. We had, in summer, we had a summer porter. That's a yellow apple that came early. Another early apple was the Williams, a very pretty red, well-formed apple. And then we had, as fall came, we had what we called a man apple, a great big, juicy, green apple that I suppose was a greening, but it was tremendous in size, and it was very tart. We had a winter porter, and had a blue nose apple, and I don't know. We had, in fact, a survey was made by a man who was interested in the early apples of New England, and he found there were 121 different varieties of early apples. When he was cutting down the orchards at the time of the Depression, when people were being given work just to get a little money, all our orchards were being cut left and right, and this man, I think he lived in Akron, anyway, it was somewhere nearby, and he became concerned about losing all the different types of apples that were prevalent in the early 1800s, late 1800s and early 1900s. So he took samples of the different trees from which he was cutting, and then gathered others, and he started a little orchard of his own, and propagating these early apples that we had. And then Sturbridge eventually found out about it, and so he turned over what he had gained to Sturbridge, and there, I believe it was, that I heard he had 121 different apples. Another disappearing variety of trees is the chestnut tree. The chestnut, the tree that produces nuts, not the horse chestnut, although it's a variety, a type of, they're the same family. The chestnut trees were very prolific in our woods, that is the woods off Hugh Road and Estabrook Woods. As a child, we just couldn't wait for the first heavy frost in the fall to run off to the woods to see the chestnuts, which had fallen during the night. The burrs are on the trees until the frost comes, and then the frost opens the burrs, and the trees, the chestnuts, drop to the ground. And sometimes the whole bird goes to the ground. Then it's a scramble whether the chipmunks and squirrels are going to get the chestnuts or whether we kids were going to get the chestnuts. We went into the woods with paper bags to gather all the chestnuts that had fallen. freely, and then we took a burlap bag to get the burrs that had come off the ground. Well, we spent the whole forenoon from early morning until noontime gathering our chestnuts, and we'd have quite a goodly bags full when we get home. And then these we would roast and eat immediately. Sometimes we would just keep them a little while. And of course we didn't always roast them. They were perfectly edible without being roasted. Oh, it was a little more fun to roast them. Yeah. And I know we often forgot them after the fantasy of running and getting them and the fun of it was over. We have them stashed away somewhere and then forget all about it until it was time for the popcorn to come along, and then we'd suddenly think, well, what about some chestnuts too? Mr. Wheeler, Alva Wheeler at 9 Acre Connor was Raymond Wheeler's uncle, and he was a jolly good sport who would fix up his great big farm wagon with two horses, put gourds for seats in the great huge farm wagon, and then all of the Wheeler, not all of the Wheeler family, because you never could get the whole Wheeler family into a half a dozen wagons, but Raymond, of course, was one who always went, and his cousin Rodney, and Julian Ballou would come up from town, too. He was a cousin of the Wheelers. And then the girls. So there were about four of the boys, and then a wagon full of girls. We'd just bundle all up, because it would be cold and frosty early in those autumn mornings, and start for Stowe. There was some other place beyond Stowe where we used to go.
Well, I should say 40 years or more ago, a blight struck these trees, so that then we have no more chestnuts for the children to enjoy picking, and the telephone company, which had been using the poles for their telephones, had to find a new source of use for their poles. I believe that may have been one reason, or maybe one reason, why they are putting them underground. It's difficult to get poles, unless probably they are commercially made poles for the lines. However, the company did make a profit, or at least had the use of these trees. But they cleaned up all the debris, because there's nothing left to show that they did not take care of everything when they took the trees out. The woods were left very clean. Now, another tree which has proved of commercial value is the willow. During the First World War, we had a factory, the powder mills in Maynard, and representatives from the powder mills went around through the town asking permission to cut the willow trees, which were since the early days of the willow and the apples and the chestnut trees. We have come to having trees that are really trees of beauty. We forget about the commercial trees.
Thank you.